Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, dear listener. Welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. This is not the beginning of the episode. The episode proper starts in just a bit, but it is our patron roundtable chat of the month. And the conversation was just so free-flowing and so organic that there wasn't really a place to stop it and to insert a middle of the show. So essentially the middle of the show this week becomes the prologue of the show. But I won't take too much of your time. I just wanted to talk about a couple of things, the first of which being JammerCon. It is the online all-day Spelljammer event that's taking place on August 20th. It'll include an entire day's worth of games, from the old AD&D rule set to the recently released 5th edition rule set, prize giveaways, discussion panels, a whole lot more. It's being put together by some of the folks behind GaryCon, Greyhawk Reborn. And essentially, these are all fans of the Spelljammer campaign setting, getting together to celebrate Spelljammer, to celebrate its uniqueness in D&D lore, its quirkiness. And we're going to have a lot of Spelljammer material here in the next couple weeks. It's going to be a lot of fun, to learn about some stuff that sometimes gets overlooked in D&D history. But yeah, there is a link to the events page on Warhorn in the show notes. From there, you can also sign up to be a GM. Eventually, you'll be able to sign up to play the games. And there's also a link to the Discord if you want to chat with anyone who is thinking about participating or is confirmed to participate. Additionally, speaking of Spelljammer, the third part of the Spelljammer series, Spelljammer Academy, is just been released on D&D Beyond. Of course, if you've already claimed the first part, then the second, third, and subsequently fourth parts will be added to your D&D Beyond account automatically. But if you have not, go ahead and get it before. I don't know if it's finite. I don't know if they're ever going to take it off, but definitely check it out and get yourself a taste of, you know, what's to come next month with Spelljammer. That being said, enjoy the rest of the show. See you next week.
Robots Radio presents.
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio. I will be your lore master for the evening. And you have stumbled upon the multiverse famous patron roundtable for the Lorecast. We are joined by none other than Coffee Bean, Darkween, and Bjorn Ironside, and a special guest, an old friend, a DM, a dungeon master with the mostest, a cyberpunk red choom, none other than the almighty crit himself, Aaron.
Woo! That's me! I'm back!
Welcome to the fumbling for... Wait, what? Where am I?
It's the wrong show. Which one?
I'm sorry.
Well, when, we reach out to the patrons every month and try to come up with fun ideas to what to talk about, you know, for our monthly show. And somebody broached the idea, like, why not favorite NPCs, you know, favorite non-playable characters, either official or homebrew. And Darkwing's like, you got to get Crit on the show, because I have some theories on Charlie Transmutation, and I need to get this straight. For those of you who don't know, Charlie Transmutation is one of the characters voiced by Crit in the Fumbling Four and the Almighty Crit live play podcast. They're currently in their second season. The first season, which I don't want to brag, I was a part of. I was a very crucial part of. My character, Jimmy Really Rad, took them all through the homebrew campaign setting of Alteris, and had laughs and intrigue and battle and death and awesome. Sacrifice. It's exactly what you would hope for a D&D campaign. It was fantastic, but I'm going to let Darkwing, I'm sure he's like chomping at the bit to get these questions asked. I'm going to let him go first. Darkwing, let's hear about your favorite NPCs.
All right. Fantastic. Okay. First, Jimmy Really Rad probably should have gained some levels from that bag. That's a spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't listened. I mean, not a big one, but like literally probably should have got some levels. I don't know for sure. I'm not the DM. To start off, I mean, like before I just interrogate poor Aaron on where he was February 31st of 2035, I do have some like regular, NPCs that maybe people have actually heard of right off the bat, like bigger, like AAA games. And AAA books, like I'm quite large into all right, Salvatore's Worlds. I enjoy what he does in Forgotten Realms quite a bit, and my favorite NPCs that I like to throw into just small things that I do, I enjoy Pickle Boulder Shoulder from the Clerical Quintet. He does find his way into Driss novels for guys that actually are in the know. You know, I'm with a bunch of other nerds, so hopefully you guys know what I'm talking about. I enjoy Pickle Boulder Shoulder and his brother Ivan, because as a team, those two can work as great NPCs, because Pickle doesn't actually speak very well. I mean, you can just kind of ramble on in just a nonsensical language and keep your players guessing, so they actually have to work their way through stuff, but gives you access to all of these other legendary clerics and warriors and rangers that you can throw into your game without it seeming like you're trying to shoehorn them in. That's where my, like, if we're going to go with like the giant setting of D&D that's available from Wizards of the Coast, those are my guys. Lately, I think the most interesting NPC would be Quincy the Bartender, if you guys see any of those TikTok videos. A friend of mine just brought him to my attention. He is every bartender for every small tavern I've ever played in, and he's brought it to life, and I appreciate him. I hope you guys have seen him, listened to him. If not, please check out Quincy's Tavern. He's awesome. Now, let's get to what I'm really here for. All right. And first of all, I have this fucking... I just got it figured. Charlie's a god. Old god. We'll call Elder God. We're not talking Cthulhu here.
Jumping straight to the point, like, look, but I know this, like, he is a deity.
This is fact.
Fact. Don't argue. This is my world. and I don't mean like Cthulhu, but like maybe a god from Warehouse 13. And here's where I'm going to break it down real quick. But what I need to know is, what is his age versus his perceived age? I'm going to need some stats. What's his home plane? What plane is he from originally? Is the transmutation a natural ability? Did he learn that ability? If he did learn that ability, where did it come from? And now I haven't listened to season 2, so there's a chance you've answered any of these questions. I just don't know it. But I know Charlie Transmutation showing up in my winter run of 5th edition.
You know, I didn't get any permission for any of that, but like, he's showing up.
He's showing up.
So I need to know things like this, as Charlie has turned into some of my favorite PSAs in the world. I mean, I'm a dog guy, but, you know, when you start off with spaying new to your dogs, because they're dogs and I'm a cat and I'm an ass, that just, right immediately, I was like, all right, I'll listen to this whole thing.
So, all right, we're going to answer these in order. So, number one, Charlie, we can actually answer three of these questions in one. So, Charlie was originally a transmutation bag that the party who originally had him about 1,000 in-game years ago decided they were going to stuff living people in.
Okay.
So, because he's a transmutation bag, anything that's stuffed into him gets broken down to its most basic elements, which arose the question of, what do you do with a soul? Well, the answer was simple. The soul is devoured by the bag and begins to create a sentient being out of the bag. And they would stuff anything from paladins to big bosses into this bag. And I had to find a way to take away this godlike gift that I've given to them. And what better way than to create a sentient bag that refuses to devour living creatures? So I thought I had them. It's just a bag that was on their hip that talked and had this kind of attitude about it. Well, apparently they were able to pass their sleight of hand checks well enough and still jam things into this bag. So I said, enough is enough. And one morning the party members woke up to see a cat standing in front of them wearing a pirate's costume. And they found out very quickly that it was Charlie Transmutation. And I guess there, actually, so go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I guess the only thing I really needed to clear up as you were going through this question, is he orange? I feel like he's orange.
Yeah, is he a tabby? Is he a calico?
Is he a tabby? Actually, he's black and gray.
Really?
Yes. At one point, he was orange, but that was only because of his color-changing shenanigans. He wanted to try to mess with a party that was way back when, and he wanted to... He changed his name to Darwin Transmutation. It was the brother of Charlie Transmutation, and all he did was change his fur color to orange. So it's funny you should say that. He has done this before. This is one of his antics.
Interesting. I have a mini cat that is painted those colors, but he's not in a pirate setup. So I guess I'm going to have to find a different mini. Shit.
I actually have a miniature of Charlie Transmutation on Hero Forge.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, you need to share a link for sure.
I'll share a link in the Discord when we're all done. But yeah,
for those of you don't know, we do have a Robots Radio Discord where this show has a text channel as well as the Aaron show as well, which we will get to. We'll definitely plug at the end. I was going to say this: the end of the show. The end of the show goes by much more quickly when we don't have all the amazing content that Aaron's producing.
So much, Pastor. But yeah, so he was originally a transmutation bag. After being born, he went off in the world to make his own path, and his own path made him, he ended up becoming the god of trickery and deceit.
So he is a god.
He is a god. He is the god of trickery and deceit.
I knew it.
You nailed it.
God damn it. I knew it.
You nailed it.
His actual age as of right now in the current campaign setting is, I want to say, 3,562 years old.
That's, so he's an old cat.
He's an old cat. He is very cartoon-like. In fact, he is the easiest way to describe him is he is a cartoon character.
Like, I always pictured him as a sort of like Garfield Heathcliff sort of vibe.
That is exactly what it's like.
Almost like the Cheshire Cat, almost kind of like where it's like, you know, like it's a cat. So like, it's a thing that, you know, shouldn't be out of the ordinary, but there's something just strange about it. Almost kind of like if it was a, like if the Fumbling Four were like an animated movie, Charlie would be animated in a different style than everything else.
Oh yeah,
absolutely agree with that.
The powers that he has, his natural power, if you took all his god status away and everything, his natural power is the transmutation ability. He can take any object and transmute it into anything he wants, as long as it shares the same or similar properties. However, now that he is the god of trickery and deceit, he is discovering on a daily his new powers, which one of them he discovered was he can change his fur color. And this is just a minor ability versus the fact that he can create objects out of thin air, though they are lies, they're illusions. He can still create them. He can travel interdimensionally and through multi-plane space, which he does quite frequently now. And if you listen to some of the other TTRPGs we do, you'll find that he's actually visited a few of the other TTRPG worlds.
Well,
and
don't worry, I'm just going to add a couple hours to my 24 hours I have a day, and I will just pop those other games right in there for me to listen to.
And that's something that I really love. Like when we were doing our episodes on Tasha, doing the research into that, there were hints and allusions that Tasha was known by different names in different settings, including our own world, including like, you know, the actual world. Mm-hmm. And so just like that sort of idea that this character can travel through different, you know, universes, essentially dimensions, whatever you want to call it, planets, and then but be known as something else, like really, like it's like the mythology of it all. I love that so much.
Oh yeah. So I think I answered all the questions that Darkwing had.
Well, I think, hold on, don't move from underneath that light. I've got things.
Don't move. I think I've actually posted Charlie Transmutation stat blocks in the Fumbling Four when we first started the podcast.
That was forever ago.
What would he be at now, mm-hmm. per se? I mean, is he legendary or is he still under level 20?
Oh, he's most definitely a legendary creature.
Okay, just double checking.
The only way you can kill him is if you find his phylactery, which is in the arm of another god.
Wait. So not only was he just a bag, but he's also a lich on top of all of these other things.
Yes.
Oh, good. Look at that.
In his people worldly
stick
travels,
with me. I'll get to
out.
The bottom of this.
Yes, he has his phylactery is none other than the goddess of justice. It's her right arm, which is a adamantine replacement arm. So no one in the world or in history knows except for him, because he did it inadvertently when he created the arm for her.
Seems like an easy afternoon of destruction. No problem. I got it. Level one.
But I'm trying to find the stat block for you guys.
Excellent.
Well, while Aaron does that, Bjorn, how about we move on to you. What are some of your favorite NPCs, either official or homebrew?
Definitely on the homebrew side, there's a Tenku salesman that was just supposed to be a one-off character that my DM brought up. He's like, yeah, you just have a bird-looking humanoid just standing there saying whatever anyone's yelling at him. He's just saying it right back right away. We're like, all right, that's weird. Why isn't he talking and flying? He's like, ask him what he is. So we try to figure out what he is. About 5 minutes later of between failed checks and then one final check that passed. Oh, he's a Kenku. Okay, can only talk so much. Can't fly. Sweet. And the town ended up getting attacked by like a group of bandits. And we're like, okay, protect him. But the Kenku wouldn't leave. Mordecai wouldn't leave. And here to find out, oh, he's a powerhouse that wasn't supposed to exist. I don't remember if he just pulled out numbers at random or if he had and preset up, but he's casting ninth level spells, just completely nuking everything. We're like, we're level seven.
Like, where did that come from?
Exactly. He was just completely obliterating like halves of the like combat field. So after that, Mordecai would kindly show up when we were about to probably get our asses to handed to us in a combat. He'd be like, oh, there's a salesman coming through. And then every time I'd ask, is it Mordecai? There'd probably be a grin or two passed around. And then shockingly, it would be Mordecai just trotting around trying to sell stuff. But that's definitely one that I've enjoyed just full out playing, because even in the next campaign that we're currently doing, we look around for Mordecai just in case he decides to transport him to another continent or some shenanigans happen. But definitely
A DM pulling shenanigans, that's unheard of,
right?
Never.
But DMs are straightforward and never do anything underhand ever.
Yeah, that's why they got that screen and it's transparent.
If you don't have anything to hide, why are you behind a screen?
Exactly. But that's definitely my all-time favorite.
No, yeah, the random supposed to be one-off NPC always and that ends up being like a major part of the campaign's plot is a favorite of mine. I remember I was running a campaign for my friends, and there was a halfling named Kefin who they were absolutely certain had more to do with the plot than I had written him in for. Like, he was just someone to like practice checks on, because this is like pretty much at the very beginning of the campaign, practice checks on for those that, you know, were playing D&D for the first time, and also and to give vital information. And then once that information was given, then he can go on his way. But like, no, he knows more, we're sure of it. I'm like, all right, roll insight check. Whatever they roll, they could have rolled a one. I'm like, okay, you're relatively sure that he doesn't know anything else. You're almost certain. You're certain he is telling you everything he knows. I don't trust him. Let's tie him up. Like, okay, we'll roll a grapple. It's like, okay, you grapple him. And so I end up writing him and his evil twin. And like, his name was Kefin Lightfoot, but they kept calling him Kevin. And so I ended up writing him, like, I wrote him further into the story, as well as his evil twin brother, who was named Kevin. And by the end of the, you know, by the end of the campaign, you know, we had a sacrifice. We had a portal to the abyss that they had to like go into. I was also playing a lot of Oblivion at the time, Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. So that definitely peppered.
Soul-stealing game.
Yeah, that definitely peppered my ideas when it came to this campaign. But no, yeah, like I said, this just random halfling that was supposed to just be around for not even the entire session, like just a small, like little bit of the session at the beginning, ended up being a crucial part to the entire campaign story. Coffee, how about you? What are some of your favorite NPCs, homebrew, official, or maybe a mix of the two?
I think of past NPCs I've had. Because we just today actually started a new campaign, so I'm trying to think. Can't remember any.
Well, I know that, you know, like Darkwing was talking about some of the like official NPCs, like especially like guys like Dritz or Catterbury, like, you know, the heavy hitters, and those are obviously popular for a reason. You know, those are world renowned. In fact, like when I first started playing D&D, I didn't realize that, like, I opened up the Forgotten Realms campaign setting and didn't realize that there was this entire mythology behind this Dritz character that I had a stat block for. I just thought that he was just like, oh, just an example of someone that could be played, not realizing that, no, this character has been around for decades at this point and has had, you know, thousands, if not millions of words written about him.
Yeah, I can't really think of any, sorry. The campaigns I've been in, it's mostly been homebrew NPCs. So
all the campaigns you're in have been homebrew. So you haven't really dealt with the official gun. So what what do you think makes a great NPC? And this question's for everyone. Like, what do you think you know, when creating an NPC or when either when you're creating it or when you're playing with it, if the DM has created it, like what makes them what makes one memorable, what makes them you know, unique, what makes them, you know, want to, like, makes you want to tell other people about them. Like I said, this is an open question. Who, anyone who wants to jump in and answer?
So, thank you. Good.
Bjorn, please enjoy Bear. Go ahead.
I think it would just be like they, you could create like this gigantic NPC of like, oh, he or she's got like millions of medals, they're war heroes. Like, I would 9 out of 10 probably like forget about that and just stick onto like the weirdest little detail. Like, oh, they got all these medals, all this thing, but they're missing their left pinky toe. Like something completely random, and I don't know why my brain would stick to it. But I'd be like, oh, yep, that's going to be a thing I'm going to have to bring up every freaking time now.
I mean, and it's those little like quirks and like little idiosyncrasies that sort of make, you know, that's what entire adventures or even campaigns can be built on. I mean, you say like, oh, like this like war hero who's missing his pinky toe, like, you know, well, why is he missing his pinky toe? And then you can create an adventure or you can create a story about that and either, you know, and you have an adventuring party has to go find the pinky toe to either, you know, save this hero's life because like he's been able to survive this long without it, but it's connected to his life force. And so he needs it back. Otherwise he'll die. Or it's sort of like a hand in Eye of Vecna type situation to where if he gets that damn pinky toe back, he could destroy the world. He has the power to do that.
Yeah, for me, it's always just been that little odd out detail, whether it was just made up on the spot or something that actually had deeper meaning, is always just some weird little detail that my brain stuck to on NPCs.
And it's always like, for me, it's always been 50-50. I'll try to like come up with like this great NPC that I was like, oh, for sure, my players are going to latch onto this one. And then I'll kind of like, you know, just like throw something together. And that's the one that they're like, no, this is the guy. This is the guy that we love. This is the one that we're going to talk about. Like, but I actually created like a whole like backstory and lore for this other one. It's like, nah, but we want the pirate with the peg leg who talks yeah, like he's yeah. from New York.
Never underestimate the power of stupidity of parties. We will latch on to the mouse that you had run across the floor.
That's my mouse now.
I just find honestly my favorite with the NPCs is ones that they always seem to be able to travel faster than you. Somehow they were there, they have seen it. There's no real reason for it. Back to that, my Deckard Cain cough. I have no idea how he managed to beat me to whatever I was trying to get to. But now he knows. And he was introduced earlier as not an enemy. So murder hobos don't just kill him. But that's where I find my NPCs really can take off, is if I can get them to cartoonishly beat everyone to what we were trying to do. You know, the church is burning. Insert name here. Seems to be inside screaming for help. Well, didn't we just talk to him in town? You sure did.
You sure did.
Well, it's kind of like the merchants from Resident Evil 4 and 8. They always like, like you just left them and then somehow, and like, you know, you go from point A to point B and they're already there, like already, like they've beaten you there and you didn't see them. It's not like they pat, you saw them pass you. It's not like you're like, you know, traversing through the village or through the town and they're just sort of like walking a bit faster than you. You see them like walk past you. They're already there. Like, yeah, they somehow move faster.
Don't get me started on that. I want an NPC Resident Evil game. I want a merchant game where you have to run around as the merchants to beat the player.
But yeah, you have that's the gameplay. Is like you have to figure out how to get there faster.
You find all the items you got to sell and all the merch you got to sell, and you have to get to the next point before Leon does.
Aaron, I mean, I think you're covered. You just use Bastani from Ravenloft and make everyone play as those guys.
Yeah, and then, I mean, yeah, that's something that Capcom could throw together as a mobile game. Easy, I feel. But really quick, this kind of doesn't have anything to do with the subject, but when Darkwing mentioned never underestimate the stupidity of a party, the D&D movie trailer dropped last week, and someone said, like, people are complaining that it doesn't make any sense for the party to jump inside of the gelatinous cube to avoid the displacer beast. And I was like, and they said, that's exactly the kind of stupid thing a party would do. And I'm like,
yep, yeah,
absolutely.
This is exactly a D&D movie.
Like this is more D&D than a lot of D&D campaigns.
You assholes would do that.
I haven't seen that clip, but it makes absolute sense to me. I fought both. I'll jump into that cube. That noise. My other characters are quite dead.
So we're asking what makes an NPC great.
Right.
And memorable. And I feel like all of these things can be summed up in one thing, which is they have to have character. They have to have something that is going to set them apart from the normal Joe and Jane in the village. They have to have that quirky kind of disposition. They have to be different. They have to be different. And that's, to me, personality is what makes the NPCs memorable.
Which is a lot of, that's on the onus is on the DM at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if the DM, plays a barkeep, a tavern owner, just relatively like a normal run of the mill tavern owner, that's not memorable. That's not, players aren't going to latch onto that. But if they play them as, they've always got some some bad dad joke or like some bad pun, some bad play on words. They're never going to remember the name. Like, let's just put that out there right now. Like, mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, they will not remember their name or remember it incorrectly. But they'll at least remember, like, oh, what? Let's go ask the tavern owner, the one with the bad jokes. Let's go ask him.
Yeah, I. It's funny you should say that, because I actually had a barkeep that told bad dad jokes and was making his own.
What, you
his
never
own homebrews. His name was Zaraj Rajim.
Nice.
Yep, I'm not saying that right.
And so another question is naming these NPCs. How do we come up with names?
Random generators online.
I'm not gonna lie.
I wasn't gonna say that out loud. I was gonna make myself sound more impressive than that.
Let's go, random generator.
I mean, now that the curtain has been pulled open, we can all admit that we've all jumped on like a dwarvish, random dwarvish name generator, random orc name generator. Like, we've all done it. Let's not try to pretend that we haven't.
Okay, I guess before those were readily available, as I'm. I'm from the vintage of 1983.
The before times.
So I've done that. I've used the random generators when they came up. But before that, I was really good at looking at the back of my soda cans or whatever I was
taking
eating
the ingredients,
and, like, grabbing half of one word and half of another, and we'll just slam it together and see if that works. And let's see. Calgars, 36 grams right there. See, look at that. That's just calories and sugar. That sounds like a very prominent warrior. Shit, Calgar.
Yeah, I mean, that's
either that or a cow farmer.
Shit. I'm looking at the flavored water that I'm drinking. A character's name could be like Pota Sulfame. It's like the first first part of one word and the second part of another.
And that was actually my first DM trying to explain to me how to create names. He's like, just do that.
That's not bad.
I don't know, this sounds like the best warrior name ever. Carbonated.
Or I'm gonna say, like, I love a good pun like that, carbonated.
And out of all three of those, the only one you're gonna remember is carbonated.
Yeah
that definitely got to.
What about Lemonade?
Lemonade.
Oh, yes.
Because I have just this.
The Sprite bottle.
You can't leave us in a room together at all.
No, I mean, and that's, I was explaining to a coworker that, you know, this, you know, she's like, I just, you know, like I don't get D&D, you know, like I'm sure it's great, but I don't get it. And I was like, yeah, it's silly and fun and dorky. And like, and I don't mind that it is, you know, like people who in the community who, you know, try to say that it's not dorky. It's not silly. Like it absolutely is. And that's, it can still be fun. It can be all those things. And, you know, there is a place for like the very like serious, like sort of like high fantasy, like Game of Thrones style, you know, play. But for the most part, you know, the people that I play with, they want to get together and make jokes and have fun with their friends. And so like something like Carbonated is like right, you know, right up their alley. Like they're going to love that.
Yeah. Carbonated.
Absolutely agree.
Oh my gosh.
I did just remember an NPC that I have an NPC. So this Let's was in the season one, I guess you could call it, of the previous campaign I was in. It was, we were at a town in the university called, it was a Cliffwater University of Magic. You can kind of guess what the acronym says.
What was it?
Cliffwater University of Magic.
Oh,
it took a while. It took a while, but we're like, for those of us that are on camera, you can sort of like see like the dots connecting.
Oh,
and we had little Microsoft processing bars over each one,
right? Like the little turn.
Pretty much, yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, if you had just mentioned it, they wouldn't have gotten it until, you know, maybe they wrote it down and they're like, oh my God, like, did you mean to do this? And the demon's like, I'll never tell.
I was like, man, I wouldn't caught that unless I was writing it in my notes during the game. And then I just been like, wait a goddamn minute.
Go on, continue.
Yeah, so we were, there was this little, like, I used to call it side quest that there was where there was like a shrill noise, then body parts would disappear. So me and the party were looking around. We eventually found the person who was doing it. It was this just really annoying, edgy-ass kid. He was annoying. But yeah, we managed to defeat him and all that. But yeah, that's kind of like a memorable NPC I just thought of, remembered.
So when you say he was like this annoying kid, do you mean like he was like a troll, like an internet troll?
he was stealing body parts to, quote unquote, create the perfect woman.
Oh, like some like weird science sort of like, yeah. Weird, but even like worse, because like, you know, like they made the perfect woman with a computer. This kid is like using necromancy and grave robbing.
Young Frankenstein. Well,
it wasn't grave robbing. It was,
yeah,
body parts off of five people.
Oh, even like even worse, like
yeah.
So like let me cut off this guy's pinky toe, this great warrior's pinky toe, so I can create the perfect woman.
It all comes together.
It all links together. These characters, it's are
Dr.
all
Dr. Frankenstein. Frankenstein.
I once knew a guy who had it was Frankenstein tattooed on him.
Oh God.
And I was like, say, homeboy, like, why do you have that? And he was Mexican, and he tried to tell me that that's how you spell it in Spanish. And I'm like, I'm Mexican, and that's not how you spell it in Spanish. You have Frankenstein tattooed on you.
Frankenstein. Is like a Berenstain Bears Frankenstein, man, or?
Oh, don't even get me started on that. It was Berenstain. We are in a separate whole parallel universe. They changed it on. No, all right, that's a whole different podcast.
Yeah, we're the Hedron Collider parallel universe podcast. But yeah, before we wrap up, I want to talk about like characters like I said, like Dritz, like Strahd, you know, like those big, like those, you know, big bads as well. We didn't really talk about like, well, let's talk about villains, because we didn't really talk about villains of like as NPCs. Like, you know, what are some of your favorite villainous NPCs? Obviously, like I mentioned, Strahd, You know, there's Vecna, who's sort of having a Lizzo moment right now, thanks to Stranger Things. Which, I mean, like, never in, you know, when Twitter started, I never would have thought I would see like Vecna trending, like, ever. Like, there's no way like that many people would be talking about Vecna. But yeah, so what are some of your favorite big bads, or not even big bads? They might just be like little bads in D&D history as NPCs.
Okay, so the entire housing system of Menzo Baranzone would be my big bads, that if I need to go somewhere, because I like to run mostly in Forgotten Realms, Menzo Baranzone's ruling houses are my favorite and probably easiest bad guys to run, just because, honestly, if you just run them like they're the government, they are just bad guys, and it's just easy to do, and it's just so easy to just, you know, forget any moral compass, just be a bad person, and you can be a ruling matriarch of Menzo Baranzone. That would be my big bad that I can just jump to, and they're my favorite. So, anybody else, please jump in and stop me from talking.
I was going to say that's a very good point. Is, you know, when it comes to like the traditional drow character, like, yeah, there are no like sorts of shades of gray. There's no sort of like nuance. There's no like, it's like, oh, they're a bad guy, but, you know, what they believe is, it makes a lot of sense. It's just the way they're going about it is wrong. Like, think like Magneto from the X-Men. But no, like I said, traditional drow, like, it's just, you can just run them as just, you know, just downright scoundrels, and like no amount of good in them. And that makes it that much more fun for the DM, because they can just be dastardly and do whatever they want to try to like screw over the party. So yeah,
I wish my totally video could that. Work right now, so you could see me nodding my head with everything you're saying.
Yeah,
just like that. Look at that. All I needed was Aaron to be here. No problem.
Yeah, Menzo Baranzone is, you know, in the drow in particular, like reading the first three Drit, Legacy of Drit's books, like got a really good feel for, you know, what that city and what that society is really like. And I'm really excited to read the Spider Queen series as well, to get even more insight into that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's a great series to learn about Menzo Baranzone, as well as some of the sister cities, actually.
So I'm going to jump in here with my favorite villains.
Let's hear it.
So I'm not going to go too in depth, but Strahd. Which I don't have to go. I don't have to go too much further than that. I mean, it's just Strahd, okay? There's no need for explanation there. Strahd is just a bad dude.
I feel like he's misunderstood, but please come on.
My personal favorite from Homebrew campaign is from season one of Fumbling Four, Destiny. That was one of my personal favorite enemies from a Homebrew campaign. Not only to see evolve through the course of the campaign, but to actually play as, because he's this cocky, arrogant, just I'm better than everyone else kind of villain. But deep down, he knows he's not, and he has to try hard, essentially. It was great to have to play that balance, and it was great to even see that balance be brought out. I liked that.
Yeah, the entire storyline for Fumbling Four in the Almighty Crit season one, like, I definitely went in a direction I was not expecting, especially with Destiny. I thought that, you know, it was going to be like, okay, like, obviously, like, they have to, you know, defeat Destiny and make sure that, you know, their plans, their machinations don't come to fruition. But at the same time, like, yeah, like, that sort of like balance that you're talking about, mm-hmm. is something that is, you don't always see in a big bad. Usually it's like, okay, they're big and they're bad. Like, you know, like, and you have to have enough like firepower to defeat them. So it's more interesting to me when the players have to, like, not only, like, obviously they're leveled up, and so they're comparable in power, but it's just not, you know, like, shot for shot. There's, like, got to be, it's like, some strategy and thinking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I enjoyed mostly out of that enemy, was that it was a, you could go head to head with him and your party would probably win, but are you going to be afforded that opportunity? Because it's brain versus brawn at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, that's why I like Strahd too, because Strahd is honestly a lot more brain versus brawn.
Yeah, Strahd's, oh man, and, I love it's... running him. I hate fighting him.
He's a nightmare.
Ditto.
Absolute Ditto. Nightmare.
Again, brain versus brawn.
Bjorn Coffey, how about y'all? Do you have any favorite villains that you can think of? Any villainous NPCs?
I mean, lore wise, there's always my favorite's Cronus.
Yep, of course.
So powerful that he has to get freaking trapped by every other god as he just plummets through all the illusions into, like, hey, you could get out eventually, you know, just murk the entire universe. But for now, he's just doing it in his brain. We should be okay. Like, that to me is just insane. I always have that, like, in my back pocket. Like, what if he got out one day? This could be a whole, like, complete game changer. But, like, have fun with that over there. So that's my all-time favorite. I don't know if that qualifies for your answer, but.
Well, I mean, like, that sort of, I mean, D&D historically has pulled from, like, actual mythology, like mythology from the real world. And so, like, it wouldn't be anything to take a Cronus-like figure and, you know, center a campaign around that. Either they have escaped. They have, you know, escaped their shackles, or they're very close to doing so.
You know, well, I mean, I think it was. Oh, that's really hardcore thunder. I mean, he definitely. I don't remember if it was 3.5 that they actually had. He has a stat block. He's CR 56 and everything. Like, he's definitely not relatively in 5e at all. But I know there was a stat block for him at one point. But I think that would be sweet to maybe have it where his prison's breaking.
Yeah, and they either have to, you know, prevent that from happening. And, you know, it'd be great if, like, I'm a huge fan of changing campaigns in the middle of them. Like, doing, like, the first part of a campaign and having it be your basic, like, you know, like, go on an adventure, like, save somebody, save something, and then have something happen. And then all of a sudden it changes to more of a, like, warfare type campaign. And it's, like, more like military battles. And then that changes into more of a, like, political campaign. And just so, like, so it keeps it fresh. It keeps the characters able to, you know, the players able to do something different. And so, yeah, something like that, you know, they could, the entire time they could be working toward preventing Cronus or a Cronus-like figure from escaping their shackles. You know, and in fact, I keep using Shackled because it reminds me a lot of the Shackled City adventure path from 3.5. But then at, you know, they fail. And then the campaign shifts from trying to prevent that from happening to all of a sudden trying to, you know, get him back or defeat him or defeat his legions, his hordes. And so, like, yeah, something like that. I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able. I mean, if D&D can do it officially, you shouldn't be able to do it. You know, why you shouldn't be able to do it homebrew?
Right.
Well, is anyone else?
I immediately thought of a campaign for that.
No, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, whenever you get into a room with other D&D nerds, if you don't walk out with at least one or two ideas for an adventure campaign. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's like, yeah, like, my brain's always working like that. I'm like, that'd be cool. That'd be a lot of fun. In fact, like, I posted an image from the Journeys Beyond the Radiant Citadel companion piece from the DMs Guild, and about the luchadores that are have been introduced. And immediately, I'm like, I've got an adventure in place. Like, I got an idea, like, inspired by the old, like, luchador films, like, starring, like, El Santo. Like I've got, I mean, mascaras. I've got an idea for like a one shot. I need to write this up immediately. But
let's go. You do.
But yeah, does anyone else have anything to add in before we wrap up? Any final NPCs to talk about? Of course, you know, like we said, we mentioned Dritz, we mentioned Strahd, we mentioned any, you know, who else did we mention in the show? Like official NPC wise. I mean, there's Elminster.
They're official.
Yeah, there's Elminster. There's, you know, usually Minsk and Boo, of course, they'll get their time to shine once Spelljammer comes out next month. You know, what's better than a space hamster? You know,
why a space hamster?
No idea. I didn't even know that Spelljammer was a thing until it was mentioned, and I had to go back. I have an older buddy of mine who's been playing since first edition. And I had to call him. I'm like, hey, you ever heard of this? He's like, oh, yeah. And he's a cranky old man. I mean, like, brain farting. And, damn it. Had a character. But he's like, Spelljammer, I hated that. I hated it. Yeah, it existed. Let me tell you about it. And then he went on for about an hour about Spelljammer for me. And then ended with just, yeah, I don't like playing that campaign. I was like, Jesus, all right, Frazier, I'm sorry. Damn.
He knows about it. Doesn't like it, but he knows about it.
Oh, absolutely knew about it. As soon as I said, I didn't get through the word Spelljammer before he was trying to tell me how it was flawed. I was like, all right, dude, I'm sorry. We're going to play it, but just, you know, good luck.
Well, before we sign off, of course, we want to thank the patrons for joining us, Coffee, Darkwing, and Bjorn. And of course, our special guest, Aaron. Coffee is having some sort of conniption fit over there.
I think it's because of what I sent him just now.
Aaron, let's go ahead. Let's go in here. What have you got planned for us?
So, as everyone knows, I am the man of many podcasts. So I'm going to focus on just three today. The Resident Evil lore cast still going strong, still going great. If you like all things RE lore, you know, you want a deep dive, definitely the show for you. I've got the Legend of Zelda lore cast again, deep dive for everything Legend of Zelda. Great. And of course, we've talked about it and several times during this episode. We've got the Fumbling Four and the Almighty Crit D&D live play. It is, I will say, I've been told it is an experience.
It is. It's a vibe for sure.
It's a whole vibe. Well, if you want to laugh, if you want to enjoy, it's definitely a show for you.
I don't want to shortchange you, but I did want to mention Cyberpunked, your Cyberpunk, yes. Red podcast, which just released the first episode of its second season. And this is something that I've been waiting. It feels like months. It might be
it
just
has been. It has been months.
It's been, I mean, it feels so much longer because, I mean, if I'm so used to hearing these characters like in a week, you know, weekly basis. And so when season one ended, you know, I was just like chomping at the bit, like, what? Come on. Like, I need more. I need more. I need more. And so it's, not to spoil too much, but, you know, the two seasons are connected. They're not same. They're not playing same characters. The mm-hmm. the players are at least, but they are connected. And some of your old favorites have shown up. So it's fun. Yep. It's fun to know.
I will say that this season is high octane. See what I did there?
I did. That's good. That's good.
It is going to be amped up by 20. Lots more action. Lots more. Life-threatening events, and it's going to be a good time because so far we've recorded, I think we've recorded a third of the second season already.
Nice.
So, it's going to be, so far where we're at in the storyline, it's high energy. We'll just say that.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. We'll be back next week with some more lore, and then join us again next month where we'll be talking with our patrons. We're going to be fantasy drafting your perfect D&D party.
We're
going to be taking characters from all over, not just D&D, but any sort of IP you want. It can be from
Master Chief.
It can be from Halo. It can be from video games. It can be from cartoons. It can be from books. But we'll set up the parameters and we'll be building our perfect D&D party. We'll be fantasy drafting because I believe it was Darkwing who brought up if fantasy football was dorkier than D&D, or it might have been our other patron Tex Tenstar, who was unable to join us this week. And they asked, is fantasy football dorkier than D&D? And I'm like, well, they're both dorky for sure. Like, don't make any bones about it. But they're both like aspects of each that are dorkier than the other. But that got the old brain squirrel turning, and I was like, let's fantasy draft a perfect party. Let's do that. So, like I said, we'll be back next week with some lore. In fact, we'll be talking Spelljammer. We'll be talking about Darkwing's friend's favorite campaign setting, Spelljammer. In preparation for the 5th edition release next month. And then, like I said, next month, Patreon Roundtable will be final. Fantasy draft of the perfect D&D campaign. And so go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just, if we're doing fantasy draft, is it by rounds? Like, are you running with NHL, NFL? NBA, what are our draft options here? Like,
we'll talk about that. We'll figure that out, and I'll also post it on the D&D Lorecast Twitter at D&D Lorecast, so that anyone who's listening can also draft their own and send those in as well. Thank you so much for listening, dear listener, and until we meet again, fare thee well, and may all your 20s be natural.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.